I grew up in a generational inheritance of alcoholism,
right,
physical abuse, sexual abuse, and suicide. So that was what I grew up in. That was my norm. That was my lot in life.
Hey, and welcome to the Tarun Stevenson Leadership Channel, where we're helping you lead, communicate, and grow to your full potential. I'm your host, Tarun Stevenson. Whatever portal you are tuning in on, whether it's YouTube, Facebook, your favorite podcast, or Instagram, make sure you subscribe and follow so you don't miss any of our episodes. Let's get into it. I'm here with Wendy Burns. Wendy Burns is an author, speaker, John Maxwell coach, and she's on the President's Advisory Council for the John Maxwell team. She's just an all-round amazing lady, and we are so privileged to have her on with us today. Hey, Wendy, welcome to the show.
Tarun, thank you so much for having me on your show today. It's a real pleasure to be on with you.
Great. And look, we've known each other for a few years now, and when I first invited you to have a chat with me, I was hoping to talk about leadership and talking about leadership in the current climate of lockdowns and coronavirus pandemic. And you sent me a copy of your book and I started reading. And as soon as I started reading it, I thought, hang on a second, we need to talk about a much bigger story here. And I just want to introduce the audience to your book. Now, Wendy's written a book called Remarkable You, A Journey to Discover Hope Within. And what struck me almost instantaneously, even before I read the first chapter, which was riveting, but what struck me immediately was that journey to discover hope. And I think now more than ever, people are desperate for hope. People are despairing. I was talking to Pat Mesiti just this morning, and he was saying that gambling statistics have gone through the roof, alcohol sales have gone through the roof, suicides have gone through the roof. And there's this whole, a backstory to what's going on in the world where a lot of people are despairing and don't know how to navigate that. But I don't think that that's anything new. There are a whole lot of people that struggle with the hand that life deals them. And what I'd love to hear you talk about is, first of all, I want to hear your story, but how do we bounce back when life goes sideways, when it takes us on a path that we never planned for, we never envisaged? How do we regain hope and navigate that towards a future that is positive and hopeful? So if you could start, just give us a little bit of a backstory for yourself. Tell us as much as you're happy to tell us from your story, just to give us some context, and then let's just unpack this.
Sure. I'm happy to share my story. My life is out there for the world.
Great.
So as a 13-year-old girl, well, let me just go back one step. I grew up in a generational inheritance of alcoholism,
right,
physical abuse, sexual abuse, and suicide. So that was what I grew up in. That was my norm. That was my lot in life. And we hear that all the time. This is my lot in life. Nothing is going to change. At the age of 13, my father made the decision one day that he was going to take his own life. And he included me in his suicide. So as a 13-year-old child, I witnessed my father take his own life. And I won't go into the details unless you want me to do that. I'm really comfortable with sharing, but I don't know how much you want me to share.
Look, I think just share what you're comfortable with. And if people want to know more, they can read the book for sure.
I think they need to read the book.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And I'm even giving it away. I'm going to put a link out today to give away some ebooks.
Amazing.
So as a 13-year-old, I witnessed my father and participated in his suicide. So already my life was in this hopeless spiral. And you've just described hopelessness. That's what hopelessness is. People can't come back. On the day my father killed himself, he took his own life. That night, as I'm trying to console my mother, then my uncle that we were staying with sexually assaulted me simply because he could. He had, because he could. I was 13, I was vulnerable, and he took advantage of that. So I already had this compounding effect. I had a parent committed suicide, I had my uncle sexually abused me, and it just progressed from there. My mother, my parents were alcoholics. When my father died, she needed somebody to drink with, so I became her drinking partner. So I was introduced to alcohol at a very early age. So I was not, it was not unusual for me to be drunk with my mum at 13, 14, 15. I had a sister and that was older than me, and two sisters and a brother that were younger than me. My brother and my two younger sisters were taken away and put in an orphanage, which is a whole other story. And my elder sister ran away because she simply couldn't cope with it all. So I took on responsibility for my mum, who was an alcoholic, and by then become a drug addict as well. So as you can see, my life was a little bit out of control.
Yeah.
Really quite hopeless. So that progressed. I inherited this sense of hopelessness. I won't go any further there, except to say that on my 17th birthday, my mum took her own life as well. So there was this pattern of suicide. So what was happening is my parents were showing me that when life gets too hard,
yeah,
you take your own life. You get to choose to opt out. And we know that's not the choice to take. Yeah. But that was the choice that was instilled within me. So until I was 34, every time something went wrong, I contemplated taking suicide and came very close many times to doing exactly that. My younger sisters tried to commit suicide. So it was this generational inheritance that was just not going to change.
Yeah.
And the compounding effect, and you start to wear it. So your perspective is so important in this. The world owed me so much because, my goodness, look what had happened to me.
Yeah.
And from the outside, I probably looked extremely normal. And you knew me back then, Tarun, and you would never have known.
Absolutely. I was amazed when I started reading the story. I had no idea.
Yeah. So we learn to wear a mask, don't we?
Yeah.
We wear a mask that life is okay, but it's what goes on in our heart and what goes in and on in our mind that affects our actions. So until I was 34, that was the pattern that I had. When I was 34, I realized that I had the power to make a great choice.
Yeah.
And that was my decision as a woman of faith, and that was my decision to follow Jesus.
Right.
In that moment, I realized that I could actually make a great choice.
Yeah.
But I want to be really very realistic here. Mm. The next morning, I still woke up in the same home, in the same bed, with the same husband that was drinking too much, with the same out-of-control life. But I realized that something had changed. And I love, we talk about seeds of hope, and I'll talk to you about my newsletter later, but I've renamed it to Seeds of Hope because we need seeds of hope right now. In that moment, I had a seed of hope that something had shifted within me. I still didn't know what it was, but there was something that could be different. So what happened? I started to realize that I could actually make choices for me. Up until then, I'd been trying to make choices for everybody else, trying to take control for everybody else. Because we do that. When our life is out of control, we try to control things around us. And maybe with the wrong way, you know, with alcohol or drugs or whatever it is that you're doing. But you try and control those things.
Yeah.
When really all I needed to do was to control me.
Wow.
To make choices for me. And often when I speak to groups, I talk about the fact that we wait for somebody to rescue us when really we need to step up and be our own hero.
Yeah.
We need to become the hero of our life and make those choices ourselves, and then starting to walk those out, because making a choice is one thing. That sounds really simple.
Yeah.
But then we have to start to walk it out on a daily basis. So we make a choice, we make that decision, and then we have to live that out. And that's when the hard work really begins. And that's, for me, where my life started to not immediately change, because I still had this generational inheritance of suicide that hung over me. So I still had to walk that out. I still had to work out what that was all about and find my freedom in that, which I share really in depth in my story.
Yeah.
Because until we actually get the help that we need, we can't walk free.
Yeah. Wow. What a powerful story. And look, if you're listening to this, you need to read the book. Wendy has really just given you a snapshot of her full story, but it is a powerful, powerful story. And Wendy, one of the things that I have noticed as I've worked with people, both as a church leader and also as a coach, is many people who, you know, maybe they have stories that are not dissimilar to yours, where other people have set the foundations for them in a way that are so distorted and so broken that it feels like that's just the norm. That's the hand I've been dealt and there's no other choice. And I have found with people who they come to a point when they know they want to change, but they live between two worlds of wanting to change but not feeling like they deserve a better life. You know, there's this shame and there's this guilt that hangs over them that seems to always pull them back to what they knew before. Can you talk a little bit about what that is like living? Because you said that you had that seed of hope, but then the hard work began. It's a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. And how do you navigate that place where you sit between two tensions? Your past and your future, and you can't go back, but there's something that just always seems to pull in that direction.
Yeah, that's a great question, Tarun. And we do. We live between these two worlds. And unfortunately, the world that we come from, even though we don't like it, it's very familiar.
Yeah.
And it can become really, really safe in an unsafe place, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We're familiar, we know what to expect, we know how hard it is, and we accept that that's our lot in life.
Yeah.
So it is transcending or transforming into a different world and what that looks like. And shame and humiliation and lack of self-worth and false friends and all of those things try and pull us back into that world and tell us, no, we're better to stay there because there's nothing for us over there.
Yeah.
So it is about that one step forward into something different. What could it look like? What action could I take? It starts with one thing. You can't do it all in one go. You can't. So it's thinking about what can I do today? So we can't change the circumstances we're in. And I said I woke up in the same circumstance. But what I can do is change something within me. So what is the perspective that I can do today to change something within me? And I came back to that word about choices before. What choice can I make today that will give me a different outcome?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's simply, and I say it in here, a journey of 1,000 steps begins with one. And it really does. It's taking that one step forward and saying no to something to say yes to something else.
Yeah.
And that's where that journey starts to take us from that one world into the other. And I really want to put a caveat on that in saying that if we find ourselves sliding back down that hill, put the brakes on, okay, don't beat yourself up. It happens, but that's okay. Let's just get back and go up again.
Yeah.
See, as we know, you know, everything worthwhile is uphill. Oh, my goodness. In a crisis, it's even steeper. but you know what? We can do it. We can make it.
Yeah.
If I can come through what I've been through, and that's only a little bit of what I've been through, to know that you can get through. And you said earlier, Tarun, that it is a journey. It really, really is a journey to find this hope. So, and I love the acronym that I've put in the book, HOPE, H-O-P-E, hanging on with patient expectations. So sometimes we are hanging on with patient expectations that tomorrow will be better.
Absolutely.
And then that falls back into, if we think that tomorrow could be better, then it affects our attitude about tomorrow. So we set ourselves up from the minute we put our toes on the floor in the morning.
Yes.
Because our attitude will colour how we see what's going on around us. And right now in this time of crisis, how we face each day when we're locked away, when we're, you know, fear is just running riot, which is more than the coronavirus. I think it's spiralling out of control. How we let that colour our perspective. How we can keep our perspective right now on this journey to find that hope.
Yeah, so good. And I love that you refer to patience being the key. I wonder, what do you think? I've long suspected that our culture has a real propensity towards instant gratification. And I wonder if that's why so many people get stuck in their brokenness, because they're not patient enough to do the journey and the hard work to get them out of it. They keep going back. They just look for the quick fixes because that's easy. It's familiar. It's what they know. And don't realize that change takes time, a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you said, because we talk about we want it fast. It's this microwave society that we want. We want instant. We want like that instant mashed potato that you used to be able to buy years ago. Add water and it'll be fixed.
Yeah.
But anything worthwhile is worth the hard work.
Yeah.
See, anything instant, we see it all the time. People want to lose weight, so they will give up food for 3 days and then they'll go back on everything because they want that instant result. But we're not going to get it instantly. That's why I say, what is one thing? And in my book, after each chapter, I put, and this was really important to me, I could have written my story and left it at that, but after each chapter, I put a reflection. And then I put an action, because nothing would change without the action.
Good.
So thinking about what action can I take today? What changes do I need to make? And what's the time frame for those changes? What's the timeline? So maybe this week I'm going to work on if my issue is drinking too much.
Yeah.
Okay. Instead of reaching for that second glass of wine or that second beer, I'm going to have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? How am I going to distract myself from that? And I talk a lot about the power of journaling, about the importance of journaling out. We start to tell ourselves how bad we are, that, you know, we're a bad parent, a bad mother, a bad sister, brother, a colleague, worker. But start to rephrase that. Start to think about what we are saying to ourselves. And also not thinking about what I can't do, but start thinking about what I can do. What's one step?
Right.
What's one seed of hope I can plant today for myself? Because we can't give out to anybody else. We can't bring hope into anybody else's life until we can bring hope into our own life.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk more about that whole process of, you know, we live out of the stories that we tell ourselves and that other people have told us. And you said earlier about how you've got to start making decisions for yourself. You can't fix everybody else. You can't rescue everybody else. You've got to start making decisions for yourself. How do you start to love yourself? I mean, one of the things I've noticed with a lot of the different types of people I've worked with, women who have been sexually abused and also drug addicts and alcoholics, have this self-loathing that has in many ways been foisted upon them by other people who have violated them when they were younger. And they live out of this story that nobody could love me, nobody could accept me. And when they find somebody that does care for them and does want to help them, they will often reject that person because they think they're unworthy of anyone accepting them. And so it's like this weird dichotomy of they're desperate to be accepted, but then when somebody accepts them, they push them away because they feel unworthy. How do you start loving yourself if that's your mode of operating, if that's your story?
Another great question. Look, we have those beliefs when we've been in that position where, you know, sexually abused or drug addict or, you know, it's been our lot in life that's been forced upon us, really. And I'm not making light of that. And if you read my story, you'll know I'm definitely not making light of that. But that they're bogus stories. We hear the world's acronym of BS, but you know, for me, they're bogus stories. They're stories that the world has told us or somebody's told us that we are not worthy. And really it is starting to tell ourselves that we are. And again, it sounds so simple, but it's little by little being able to look in the mirror and being able to say, I am worthy of this. I am worthy to be loved. And I talk about the power of journaling. It's really important to be able, and for me, you know, I'm a woman of faith. I know that for me, my turning point was realizing that my God loved me so much.
Yeah.
Loved me so much that he told me, He was the only one that knew the guilt I carried over my father's death, right? So I'm going to share my faith for just a moment. I don't normally on a podcast, but when I made my decision to accept Jesus, when I went out for prayer, the lady that prayed for me said that, that God had known the guilt I'd carried over my father's death. Nobody knew. I had not shared that. Yeah. So God got my attention. See, God knows the very details of our lives.
Yeah.
And I'm still saying the next day I still woke up in the same circumstances. I still have to walk that out. But to know that we are worthy of love by our Creator.
Yeah.
Starting to see that we are worthy of love for ourselves. And one of the biggest keys to be able to being self-worth, that sense of self-worth, was forgiveness. Forgiveness of those people. Look, I think I forgave my dad and my mum and my uncle 100 times over, time and time again. But really what the key was when I forgave myself. See, we often forgive other people, but we forget to forgive ourselves. Yes. And it was in the forgiving of myself. For because we feel like we've allowed those things. You know, when my uncle sexually abused me, I had no idea as a 13-year-old girl what was about to happen, but I still carried the guilt of that.
Of course.
But I needed to be able to look in the mirror and say, I forgive my part in that, any role that I thought or that false bogus story that I had that I was responsible.
Yeah.
So we need to forgive ourselves for what we think we have done.
Yeah.
And out of that forgiveness opens us up to be able to love ourselves in a different way.
Yeah.
I look back at photos of myself as back before I made all of these decisions to follow Jesus and to deal with all this muck in my life, that I'm a different person than I am now. There's so much more freedom and so much more life and hope within me.
Yeah.
But it starts in here. We have to find it within us. And Anna, I know what I'm saying probably sounds simple, but I know that it's not, because it is a hard journey, but it is a worthwhile journey and it is possible. So it starts with one thing. Maybe it is today when I brush my hair that I can look in the mirror and just say it. I'm actually worthy. I'm worthy.
Yeah.
Or look myself in the eyes and say, I'm worthy to be loved.
Yeah.
I'm worthy to be better than this. So starting to journal on those things as well, the power of journaling, because it affects our hearts and our mind.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, writing out, I am worthy.
Yeah.
Letting people, you know, so because what you want to do is you want to get it into your heart. Absolutely. And into your mind, into your thoughts and into your words.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and picking yourself up. I talked earlier about being your own hero. I want to talk about another analogy that I like to use.
Please.
I don't know if you're a Superman fan, but I wasn't. But I use the analogy of Superman had a weakness, and that was kryptonite, right? Yeah. So when you're on this journey to discover hope,
yeah,
you need to understand what is your kryptonite, what is the thing that is going to take you out. So what is the thing that is dangerous for you to be around?
Yeah.
Is it an addiction? Is it false friends? Is it those bogus stories or the situations you put yourself in?
Yeah.
So you need to start to think about what are the things around you as well. So you start to build yourself up in other ways. So I know it's a strange analogy, isn't it, Superman and kryptonite, but really it's the best way to explain it. Everybody knows Superman.
I think I know where you're coming from there. I was listening to Jordan Peterson recently, and he talked about the Superman character, and when it was in comic book form in the 1940s, Superman was invincible and he had no kryptonite. There was no weakness that he had, but they found that readers didn't relate to Superman who was invincible. They could only relate to a Superman who had a flaw, because as human beings, we are all flawed. We're all broken.
Exactly.
And yes. And I think, you know, thank you for sharing your story of faith, because I know that there are some people who are watching this now that you don't, you're not a person of faith, or maybe you don't have a spirituality, and that's okay. But,
that's,
you know, as a person of faith, something that resonates with me, you know, with the Jesus story, is we're not talking about a God that's a way off and unapproachable, but we're actually talking about somebody who was entered into the suffering of humankind and experienced the brokenness that we experience. And I think that's what has resonated with me so much. You know, I went through a period in my 20s where I rejected the faith of my parents, and I tried to find my way without any kind of religious connection. But I kept coming back to this thing, is that I knew I was broken. I knew I was flawed. I knew I had things that I had to work out. And the only way I could get my head around it was realizing that actually the Jesus story illustrates a God who said that he would enter into the brokenness. He wouldn't stay aloof from it. He wasn't like a Superman that had it was invincible. In fact, he said, no, I will become flawed and I will become broken with you. But then I'll show you that you can walk out of it and you can actually overcome it. Yeah. And, you know, and I love the way that you framed that, because until we can recognize our weakness and accept it as who we are, it's our story, but it doesn't have to be our identity. Then exactly. We can start to move forward. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't recognize is your identity and your experiences are not the same thing.
Yes, and absolutely.
You know, we form our identities out of our experiences, and it's like that old analogy that many personal growth coaches use. You know, they get the $20 bill and they rub it under their armpit or they stick it down their pants, and then they say, "Who wants the $20 bill?" You know, the money has intrinsic value and worth, irrespective of how you treat it. And I know from my own journey, you know, shame has been a very big part because of the mistakes I've made and the people that I've let down. Coming to the point where, like you said, I could forgive myself and know that there was an intrinsic value in who I was as a human being.
Yes.
And even though I had let people down, even though I'd made huge mistakes, that there was still more to my story than my experiences. And I love that, you know, that's the angle that you've really taken in the book as well, because I think that's so, so powerful. So tell me more about once you reach that turning point and, like you said, you still woke up in the same marriage in the same bed with the same problems. Talk to me about some keys. We've talked about forgiving yourself. We've talked about writing it down and owning your weaknesses. What are some other steps that people could take if they want to start moving their life forward in a direction of hope rather than hopelessness?
Yeah, that's great. For me, it was about thinking about where could I grow. So I started to move forward in the area. I started with my attitude. Attitude was a really big thing. So I started to look at how I could change my attitude. Yeah. I had a really smelly attitude. You can look at me now, you may not think that, but I did. So it affected everything that I did. So it started with one thing at a time, but I also positioned myself to be able to grow.
Yeah.
So I started to think about what if there was a life that could be different.
Right.
What if there could be a life that could be better? So I started to be really intentional about what I did, and I positioned myself around other people. And there's a real danger in this. You have to be careful. And I did talk about that in the book as well.
Yeah,
is I positioned myself around other people that were smart and were able to grow and had something to offer. So I'm talking about an inner circle,
yeah,
who you
great.
Bring around you.
Great.
So I had to push out some people out of my inner circle that weren't serving me or very well, as in they were bringing me back into that old unsafe place, yeah. And finding people that I could be around that would encourage me, that could see the gold within me.
Great.
So we need to have people around us that can see more for us than we can see for ourselves.
Yeah.
And mine started in a school, Tyrone, would you believe? I had some teachers. I was a teacher's aide, and I had some teachers that worked with me, and they could see more in me than I could see in myself. And when I actually launched my book at Avarita, some of the teachers turned up as a surprise. They saw that I was there and they were so thrilled.
Yeah.
And I'd written about them in my book. But they saw something within me, encouraged me to be more than I could see. So positioning yourself around others that can see something within you is really, really important.
Absolutely.
So I talk about the power of the inner circle.
Yeah.
And then looking at ways that I could grow. And for me, again, talking about my faith, finding out what was my purpose going to be.
Yeah.
I've got this new life, but what does that look like?
Yeah.
And it's a journey in itself, finding out what it is that you want to do or how you can add value to somebody else. And that's all that growth. We grow as we give to somebody else. So we feed seeds of hope within here.
Yeah.
And then when we've got something inside of us that's hopeful, we can give that to somebody else, right. And we can add a hope to somebody else. That's so for me, it was quite a big journey. I want to go back to something that you said when you were sharing about faith, because I really felt that was important to share.
Please.
When we start to look, maybe you're not a person of faith, and that's perfectly fine. Please, you can fast forward this bit if you don't want to hear it. But I wanted to be somebody of faith because I pulled some people into my inner circle that were, you know, really good and were growing, and I could see that, you know, I could be like them. But I was choosing their faith in God and not my faith in God.
Yeah.
It's really important to find out who we are in God. If we choose God as our creator, then what's my relationship with him? It can't be attached to somebody else's relationship with him. Yeah. And that was such a big journey. It's like when we are looking to grow, I can't be a Tarun and Tarun can't be a Wendy.
Yeah.
But for so long, I found somebody and thought, yep, I can dress like them, talk like them and behave like them.
Yeah.
But we can't. We have to be who we are meant to be. So it's finding out who we are. Because we put our worth on what somebody else is. And maybe we put our worth on a label in a job, and I don't know how far you've got through my book, but I talk about that there was a time when I labelled my title, well, that was who I was, but that's not who we are. And when we do that, we find that that often is taken away from us until we actually can find out our worth of who we are without that title, without that friend. It's who we, that intrinsic worth of who we are inside. That's and good. That's a great learning point. And that's that great. For me, even though I was already going to church and doing all those things, I was sitting in church still contemplating suicide.
Yeah.
Because you don't share. You know, that's the shame and the humiliation and the guilt that comes with that, that loathing. It's a very thing that it's like this sneaky little thing that is just waiting for you to be down. Yeah. And then it'll say, come on now. Come on, let's finish this. All the time, so like I try and speak against suicide as often as I get an opportunity to speak in churches and organisations. But more so now, there are people out there that will really struggle with this, particularly people that are isolated on their own or women in domestic violence situations. Yeah. If you know somebody, you know, give them a copy of my book. It's free. You know, I'm making it available free because we need to find a way through this.
Great.
There's got to be a way through this, and there is.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a dangerous time for many people, I think, to
read. Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you said about finding who you are. One of the turning points for me is when I joined the John Maxwell team and I started to do the training, and part of the training was to create a mission or a purpose for your own life. And I realized that so much of my life and so much of my conflict came from my identity was affixed in what I did. You know, you can see the guitars on my wall, and for a long time those guitars were my identity. If I wasn't standing on a stage playing music, I was nothing. And many times in my young life, I found myself unable to get the opportunities to play music, and that became a bigger perspective of who I was. I felt like a failure. I felt like I could do nothing good with my life until I realized that my purpose had nothing to do with what I was doing. My purpose could be found in anything I was doing. If I knew who I was and I knew why I was created, then I could actually be a school teacher. I can be a pastor of a church. I can be a coach. I can even be a YouTuber or a podcaster and still add value to life when I know who I am. And I think that that's a really important reminder. And thank you for reminding us that you've got to take the time to really discover your purpose. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's a journey, but it's not in who you are and it's not your title that really defines your purpose. That's great.
Absolutely. And the important thing, oh, I lost my headset there. The important thing in this is knowing that, and that's why I call this book Remarkable You.
Mm.
We all have a remarkable within us.
Absolutely.
We just don't think we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, that was such an important name, being able to really believe that I could be remarkable, that there was something within me that was remarkable, and gold, and the limited edition specifically has gold on it because I believe we all have gold within us.
Love it.
But the bogus stories and the grit and the grime of this world to cover it over. And we really, the thing that I took away from my dad was that he used to take me panning for gold, and I say this in the introduction, and I can remember as a child going panning for gold, and he would say to me that it's hard work getting through the grit and the grime to find the gold. And when I was writing this book, it came back to me, and I was thinking, you know what, that is so true in life. We have to really work hard to find the gold within. And, you know, we have words spoken at us and the things we believe about ourselves and what the world tells us, that there's nothing good about us, but we actually are good. We are remarkable, and we do have gold within us. And you're right, a label doesn't make. It took me a long time to realize that my purpose in life is to be a woman of influence.
Yeah.
God has given me this story and taken me on this journey to be able to share and make a difference in other people's lives. So I get to do that in whatever aspect that he chooses to open the door for me to go down. Thanks. But we can all do that. You know, there is my greatest delight and my greatest passion in life, brings tears to my eyes, is to help people discover that they are remarkable.
Yeah.
To help people find that there is hope within, that what they've been dished up in life is not where they need to stay, that they can make some good choices and come through the other side. And that's what I love to do. That's really, yeah, makes my day when I get to work with people. I work a lot with women and men in that area, but, yeah, really just helping them discover that there is more than where they are at the moment.
That's fantastic. And the thing I love about your story, Wendy, is, you know, if anybody really had an excuse to throw up their hands and give up on life, it would be you. You know, just as I've read your book, I thought, man, I can't even believe the journey you've been on and the person you are today. You know, I wonder how many people would be able to pull themselves through that and come out the other end positively. But what I love about it is that in that there's hope, that, you know, whoever you are, wherever you are listening, whatever you've been through, you need to know that it's never so bad that it can't get better. It's never so bad that you can't actually change your life. And I want to really encourage you, do everything you can to read Wendy's story. It is a powerful, powerful story. And if anything else, it will just give you hope to make a change for good in your own life. You know, we live in uncertain times. We live in times when a lot of people don't know what's happening with their businesses and with their careers or with their families. And, you know, we're all in the same boat. And that's what's so amazing about this time is we're all experiencing it together. But, you know, stories like Wendy's are really the kinds of things that you need to feed yourself to actually be able to grow and to move forward. My favorite quote of all time is Jim Rowan. He says that you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Yes. And, you know, you were talking earlier about surrounding yourself with people that will actually help you grow. And I just think that that is so important to remember, that if you're going to make change, you've got to think about who's around you, who's influencing you, who's speaking into your life. And, you know, that's such a powerful reminder. Thank you, Wendy, for that. If people want to get a hold of your book, what do they need to do? How do they get a hold of your book?
Yes, I'm going to tell you that, but I just want to add one thing to what
please,
you just said.
Please, go ahead. So, please. No, go for it.
I want to just say, it's never too late. You may be listening to this and you may be, you know, 50, 60, 70, 40, whatever age. Yes. It is never too late. It is never too late to change. It's never too late to step in and make it different, to make it better, to start this journey. And I really want to encourage you with that. You can go to my website, which is Wendy Burns Consulting, and / Remarkable You will take you to my Remarkable You page. You can click on there and you can join my email list as well. And each week I'm sending out a newsletter called Seeds of Hope. On my Facebook page, Remarkable You or Wendy Burns or Wendy Burns Consulting, I have way too many Facebook pages. I will also pop up the link. There's a free giveaway of my book. You just have to click in. Ignore the other books. Just go to Remarkable You. It's one of those, you know, part of something my publisher has put me in where you can okay. download a free ebook.
Okay, sure.
But if you did want a limited edition, email me, which you'll find all those details on my website.
Right.
And if you can't afford it, let's talk about what I can do to help you out, because good. I want everybody to have this book in their hands, particularly right now. And I do believe, I was walking yesterday and I believe as I was praying that this book is for a time such as now.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm getting lots of radio interviews and lots of podcast requests out of the blue.
Wow.
You know, that's God's timing. Last week it was America and today it's Australia.
Awesome.
So it's never too late to find the remarkable within. And right now I believe the world is in a state of reset. We're all the same.
Yeah.
We're all on this trajectory of crisis around us and we have a moment to reset.
Fantastic.
Be safe. Be wise. Mm. Be safe within your heart and within your mind. Think about what you're listening to, what you're watching, what you're feeding your mind with through this time is really important as well.
Absolutely.
So that you're just like feeding your body with good nourishing food will keep you healthy. Feeding your mind with good nourishing things is never more important than now.
Yeah.
You know,
and I mean, the beauty of technology is you can just get online and there's so much you can feed yourself with. We're not so isolated that we can't still do exactly what you're saying. And that's so great. We're going to post the links to what Wendy has described in the description so you can go ahead and do that. Wendy, I want to grab a couple of copies of the physical book and I'm going to give it away to any listener. If you want a copy of this physical book, I want you to put a comment in below this video. Let me know. We're going to send a couple of copies out. If you do have the ability to, what I want to do is encourage you to actually get copies of this book and give them away. This is a
yes.
really powerful story. And I totally agree with you, Wendy. This book is a really timely story for what everyone is going through now. As soon as I opened it up, I thought, yeah, this is exactly what the world needs to hear. And this is why I've been harping on it about it so much. Wendy didn't ask me to promote her book. All right. I'm doing this because I just wanted to have a chat with Wendy and found out she had this amazing book. So you've got to understand, this is not a promo junket that Wendy is doing. Mm. This is just, I read the book and was so moved by the story that I want more people to hear about it. So if you are in a position to buy physical copies, do it and give it away, because more than ever, the world needs hope. So we're going to stick the descriptions down below. Sign up to Wendy's newsletter. You know, she's an amazing woman. She's doing an amazing work. And I really believe that it will make a huge difference in your journey wherever you are. Wendy, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and an honor to hear your story. And I'm really looking forward to seeing where this takes you in the future.
Thank you, Tarun. Thank you for having me on today. And just one last thing. Remember, you are remarkable, that there is gold within.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you got a ton of value out of that. Don't forget to like, comment, and share with somebody who you think will benefit. And make sure you check the description for the free resources that I want to send your way to help you in your growth journey. Until next time, I'm Tarun Stevenson, helping you lead, communicate, and grow to your full potential.